Riza Kolodny at the comm console looked at me and then the captain and finally turned her face resolutely to her screens, not wishing to get involved. Before Duchamp could reply, I said, "The bugs eat Cermet. It's like caviar to them, for God's sake." She leveled a hard stare at me. "You have proof of this?" "Your daughter has the proof in her lab. It's true. Now get those two people back inside here." Duchamp looked as if she'd prefer to slice my throat, but she touched the communication stud on her chair arm and said crisply, "Yates, Sakamoto, come back inside. Now. That's an order." "Okay, by me," Yates said with obvious relief. She was not accustomed to so much physical exertion, clearly. "Yes, Captain," said Sakamoto, so even and unemotional that the words might just as well have come from a computer. Duchamp called Rodriguez back to the bridge, and Marguerite came up from her lab. She and I crowded the hatchway as she displayed her experiment's results on the main screen. Within minutes, Dr. Waller, Yates, and Sakamoto came up, making a real crowd in the passageway. I could feel them pressing me, pushing their sweaty bodies against me. My heart was racing. I felt queasy and breathless at the same time. "I'm still checking air samples for the signature of the Cermet materials," Marguerite was telling her mother. "But so far there is none. The organisms seem to have digested every molecule." If this information rattled our steely-eyed captain, she did not show it. Turning to Rodriguez, she said, "What do you think?" Rodriguez's brow was already deeply creased with worry. "We've got a catch-22 situation here. We need to repair the shell or sink, but if we go outside, the bugs will degrade our suit so badly we'll be at risk of total suit failure." "You mean death," I said. "Someone could get killed." He nodded a little sheepishly, I thought. Marguerite added,
"Meanwhile, the organisms are eating away at the shell. They could damage it to the point where...
She drew in her breath, realizing that if the shell failed, we would all go plunging into the depths of the atmosphere. Is this what happened to Alex, I wondered? Was his ship devoured by these hungry alien bugs? Then I realized that the organisms weren't alien at all. This was their natural environment. We were the aliens, the invaders. Maybe they were instinctively fighting against us, trying to drive us out of their world. Nonsense, I told myself. They're just bugs, microbes. They can't think. They can't act in an organized way. I hoped. Duchamp looked straight at me as she said, "This is what we're going to do. Each of us will take turns at repairing the shell. None of us will stay out longer than Tom and Mr. Humphreys did." "But our suits were damaged," I objected.
"We will keep the excursions shorter than your EVA was," Duchamp said. "Short enough to get back inside before the bugs can damage the suits."
From behind me, Yates grumbled,
"Then it's a race to see if we can plug the leaks faster than the bugs can eat through the shell."
Duchamp nodded.
"In the meantime, I intend to go deeper."
"Deeper?"
Riza blurted.
"There's a layer of clear air between this cloud deck and the next, about 5 kilometers below us," Duchamp said.
Rodriguez grinned humorlessly.
"I get it. No clouds, no bugs."
I could feel Yates start to object, but before she could, the captain went on.
"Willa, I want you to calculate the maximum time we can work in the atmosphere out there before we run into danger of suit damage."
"Yes, Captain," Yates said glumly.
"Tom, you take the con. Mr. Humphreys and I will take the first shift. Everyone else will take a turn at the work."
She hesitated a moment, looking past me. At her daughter, I supposed.
"Everyone except Dr. Waller," she said.
I felt the doctor's gusting breath of appreciation on the back of my neck. He was in no physical condition for an EVA, true enough. But I worried about Marguerite. She had no training for this sort of thing. Or did she? Duchamp got up from her command chair. Everyone in the passageway flattened themselves out to make room for her to pass by. I followed her, fighting down the fears that were shaking me. In a sense, of course, none of us had any training for this sort of EVA. Virtual reality simulations were all well and good as far as they went, but nothing could prepare you for being outside in those clouds, with the wind gusting against you and the ship shuddering and bucking like a living animal. Add to that the knowledge that the bugs were chewing away on your suit. It scared me down to my bladder. I felt jittery, almost lightheaded, but it had to be done, and I wasn't going to back away from my share of the responsibility. It wasn't easy, that's for certain. Even though we worked inside the shell, grappling along its curving bulkhead, dangling from the structural support beams by our suit tethers was far more demanding than climbing mountains.
And it was dark inside the shell. Outside, even in the clouds, there was always a yellowish-gray glow, a sullen twilight that was bright enough to see by once your eyes adjusted to it. Inside the shell, we had to work by the light of our helmet lamps, which didn't go far. Their glow was swallowed up by the yellowish haze pervading the shell's interior. It reminded me of descriptions of London fogs from long ages ago, groping along in the misty gloom. "Riza," I heard Duchamp call over the suit radio, "get Dr. Waller to put together as many lamps as he can take from stores. We need working lights in here."
"Yes, Captain,"
came the Comtech's reply. Despite everything, I had to smile inside my helmet. Duchamp wasn't allowing our ship's doctor to sit idly while the rest of us worked. We sprayed epoxy all across the shell's enormous interior. And it was huge in there. The vast curving space seemed measureless, infinite. The darkness swallowed the pitiful light from our helmet lamps. I began to think about Jonah in the belly of the whale, or Fuchida exploring the endless caverns inside Olympus Mons on Mars. There was no way to know precisely where the leaks were. The shell wasn't instrumented for that, and the leaks weren't so big that you could see daylight through them. We concentrated our spraying on the aft end of the envelope, naturally, because that's where we had seen the charring. Duchamp and I spent an exhausting half hour in the shell. Then Rodriguez and Marguerite replaced us. Duchamp would have had the entire crew in there at once and gotten the job over with, except for the fact that we had only two epoxy spray guns aboard. So two by two, the crew worked hour after hour on sealing the leaks in the gas envelope. Exhausted as I was, I took another turn, this time with Sakamoto. Rodriguez actually went out three times. So did Yates, grumbling every inch of the way. When my second tour was over, I half collapsed on the deck just inside the airlock, too weary even to think about peeling off my suit. I simply lifted off my helmet and sat there, not even taking off my backpack. It wasn't only the physical exertion, although just about every muscle in my body was shrieking. It was the mental strain, the knowledge that the ship was in trouble, serious trouble, and we were all in danger. Sakamoto, standing above me, pulled his helmet off and gave me a rare smile. "Work is the curse of the drinking man," he said, then started to get out of his suit. I couldn't have been more surprised if he had sprouted wings and flown back to Earth. Finally, it was finished. I had crawled into my berth to inject an enzyme shot into my arm when the intercom blared a scant 6 centimeters from my ear.
"Mr. Humphreys to the bridge, please."
Bleary-eyed, I finished the injection, then slid out of the berth and padded in my stocking feet toward the bridge, not even bothering to smooth out the wrinkles in my coveralls. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew I was sweaty and far from sweet-smelling, but I didn't care. Duchamp was in her command chair, as flinty as ever. Rodriguez must have been grabbing a few winks of sleep. Yates was at the comm console. As soon as I ducked through the hatch, Duchamp said to Yates,
"Tell him, Willa."
Looking far from jocular, Yates said,
"I have good news and bad news. Which do you want to hear first?"
"The good news," I snapped.
"We stopped the leak,"
she said. But her face did not show any sign of joy.
"The ship is back in trim, and we've broken out of the clouds into the clear air."
"We're pumping out the air we took in during the descent through the cloud deck," Duchamp added, "and replacing it with the ambient air outside." I nodded. "Good."
"Now the bad news," said Willa. "Every one of our suits is damaged, at least slightly. Not one of them would pass a safety inspection. They all leak."
"That means we can't go EVA?"
"Not until we repair them," Yates said cheerlessly.
"All right," I said. "That's not as bad as it might have been."
"The question is," Duchamp said, "will there be more bugs in the deeper cloud decks?"
"It gets awfully hot down there," I said. "More than 200 degrees Celsius. And that's 30-40 kilometers above the surface."
"So you don't think we'll have any problems from the bugs?"
"We should ask Marguerite. She's the biologist." Duchamp nodded.
"I've already asked her. She said she doesn't know. No one knows."
I heard myself say, "There can't be anything living at such high temperatures. It gets up to 400 degrees and more at the surface."
"I wonder," she murmured.
From being a total skeptic about the bugs, the captain had swung to suspecting them to be lurking in the next cloud deck, waiting to devour us. Then another thought struck me. "Where's Fuchs? Has he gone down into the second cloud deck yet?" She nodded.
"No. He appears to be hovering in this clear area just as we are, according to the latest word from the IAA.
I wonder if he... Duchamp and the bridge wavered out.